Welcome to Take It From Us with host Kent Johns. Real people, real voices, real lives. Discussing mental health, addiction, and disability in the community. Your weekly window to the real world. Welcome to Take It From Us.
In November 2020, Camille Kite was addicted to methamphetamine and was dealing drugs for a senior member of the mongrel mob in Waikato. She'd just been arrested and was facing a lengthy prison term. Things were pretty desperate. Today, she's the lived experience lead at Care NZ in South Waikato and organises and facilitates drug treatment programs and helps those battling addiction to stay safe one day at a time. On Take It From Us, we will hear Camille tell her story with raw honesty and self-reflection. Things have changed since November 2020. She has come a long way in that time. A warning, our conversation deals with issues of violence and drug addiction. Here is Camille Kite. We are recording our interview today, our conversation today, on Mother's Day. How important is Mother's Day for you, given where you've come from and the fact that you have a daughter?
Very important to me today. I've got a real blessing. I get to share Mother's Day with my own mother as well as my own children. So, in the past, it's never looked like that. Not for a very long time until I found recovery. So it is a very special day for me today.
How old's your daughter now?
I've got two. So my eldest is 14 and my youngest is 12.
14 and 12. And do they ask lots of questions about your life?
I'm very open with them about my life. So they know everything. They pretty much know everything. They've seen previous recordings that have happened, as well. And they know my story.
Where's a good place for you to tell us your story? Where's a good place to start?
My story starts from a real young age, And are you happy? You just want me to share my story?
Go for it.
Okay. So, in early years, right, I really had an issue or a problem with seeking outside validation from other people. And that's what really, was quite prevalent in my life at that point in time growing up. So I was with boyfriend after boyfriend after boyfriend, didn't feel like I really belonged anywhere, felt like I, was unloved, felt I had some abandonment issues from my father leaving at such a young age, and having to grow up and witness, my mum's heartache. That was really hard. So I had this view on men too at that point in time that all they did was hurt women. And I picked all the wrong relationships. So that's pretty much where what I would call my addiction started. I then picked up, lots of people talk about it. Marijuana was probably the first drug that I picked up. But prior to that, I picked up cigarettes and I was smoking full time at 13, And after marijuana, it was not long after that I picked up meth. I picked up meth at the age of 14. And it didn't become a daily thing until I hit about 17. At 17 years old, I was using it daily. I was in a really toxic relationship at that point in time too, which made access to that drug really easy. There was a miracle that happened between that was I got pregnant. So I'm a young mum. But I got pregnant and that pregnancy actually saved my life. I managed to get clean off drugs. But in that time, I didn't realize and I didn't actually have an understanding around what addiction truly meant. And I cross-addicted to exercise. So after I had my two children, I went into exercising like there was no tomorrow. I went bodybuilding. I lost so much weight. And to the point where I actually ended up having a brain bleed. Like I put my body through so much stress. And that then my life completely changed from there. And my addiction with drugs just picked up. And within 6 months of me picking back up after that period of sobriety as such, I lost my house. I lost my business. I lost my children. I planned on just using every second weekend when I didn't have the children. That was my plan. It never went to plan like that. It was every time I was like, oh, I'll just stop on Monday. Monday never came, you know, and it was always Tuesday came and, oh, I can't do this. I have to continue using, you know, and I felt like I got myself into a point where I felt like I needed it to survive. And to do that, you kind of have to mingle with all the wrong people so that your access to it is a lot easier, right? So I got myself involved with a lot of people who didn't serve me very well, you know, my physical health or my emotional health. That includes romantic relationships. I began sex working as well, because that kind of goes hand in hand with that lifestyle. And I got highly involved with organizations. And, you know, I've got 3 pages of criminal records of charges. And you'd think that the first one would have been enough when I got done for supply, but it wasn't. So drug dealing in its own right was also a high, you know, but it was hard and fast cash all the time. So one minute you felt like a millionaire, the next minute it was gone. And I always found that I was my best customer anyway. So, you know, it was always changing. There was so much chaos all the time. In that very last year of my using, things were really dark and really grim. There was multiple times where I tried to take my own life. I was just bouncing from place to place to place to place, living out of washing baskets. It's something that I'll never forget, is living out of washing baskets and just like, it's so bizarre, man. It's really bizarre. And putting myself in really dangerous situations at that point in time too. Like, you know, I'd walk into a place where there's guns, there's drugs, there's money, and there's violence, and thinking it's really normal. Like, my distortion around what was safe was really not safe, right? So I thank God today that I'm actually still alive, because there are a lot of situations. And if you've heard my previous interview, you know, like, there was an instance there where I was used as bait for a kill that actually happened. And that's really scary when I think about that, because, you know, I was being followed around for a good 2 weeks in a car that they thought belonged to somebody else. You know, I was purposely placed in that. So, yeah, very interesting. The way that world works is it's all about gain. And if you don't have anything to offer, you're disposable. And it doesn't matter what you have to do. So, you know, I got to a point near where if I could sell a body part to save my life, or if I could sell a body part to get high, I would. And I did, you know. I did some really, really horrible things in my addiction that me as my true self would never, ever consider doing. And it's all just because of the addiction, right? I see my addiction as a disease. It's the best way that I can, I look at it. And I'm grateful today that, yes, because of my recovery, I can make amends for all that behavior. But I still have to live with it. So anyway.
Forgiven yourself? Have you forgiven yourself for some of those things?
Yes. Yeah. But that's been a journey in itself. Yeah. And in all honesty, that's taken a lot of writing. That's taken a lot of connecting with, I work a 12-step program. I actually work a couple of 12-step programs, actually, and I have a sponsor. And yeah, working that through with a sponsor has been really, really helpful for me. And then speaking about it and being really open and honest. So, like, talking with my children about it, talking with my parents about it has been really freeing for me, instead of holding it in and shoving it under the carpet like we used to get taught to do. It's all about transparency today and owning who I am. So if we fast forward. Once I got caught for my last set of charges, which were really hefty charges, and I still remember that, you know, it was horrible that last week. My very good friends had been raided, and then the police were looking to me. And they raided all these other properties that I was known to associate at. And for some strange reason, I have no idea, but higher power maybe, had put me somewhere totally else, so totally different. And I was safe from those raids. But unfortunately, the people who were subject to those raids, they're still... Yeah, that's hard when I think about that, because it causes harm, you know, to people who weren't even a part of it. I went on the run after I knew I had a warrant out for my arrest. I went on the run for a week, and during that week, it was hell. It was hell. All I was worried about was trying to get a stash. That's what I was thinking in my brain. I knew I was going to jail. All I was worried about was getting a stash, getting enough of a stash to take into jail with me, and seeing my children. So I took a car and I drove up and down the North Island for a whole week. And the whole time I was driving, I tell you now, the level of paranoia was surreal. I thought every single vehicle that was passing me was an undercover cop. It was, honestly, there was nowhere for my brain or my addiction to escape. You know, I was stuck. I was so stuck. And it was horrible. It was a horrible feeling. So I said goodbye to my children. I'm really grateful that I was able to do that. And I ended up handing myself in on the following week on the Monday. And I used to think that, you know, my last use was always going to be, I was always going to go out with a big bang. I thought, oh yeah, I'll use the X amount and I'll make sure I'm fucking like, oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, cuff. Then I'd be out the gate, completely out the gate, and it'd be with this person, that person, and this person, you know? But actually, my very last use, I didn't even use all of the product that I had. I was over it. I was so over it. And we talk about having rock bottoms, right? I had so many rock bottoms. So I'm not a big believer in a rock bottom. I think that we can be a bottomless pit. And it's actually when we decide to put the shovel down. You know, I was constantly digging. I was digging those rock bottoms all the time. And then I finally, that day, I decided enough's enough. I can't do this anymore. The drugs weren't working anymore for me. They weren't doing anything. It was just making me feel worse. I had nowhere else to turn, and I only had two options left. The two options were, Camille, you either take your own life, right, and you hurt your children, you hurt your family even more, or you try something completely new and you go and try a whole new way of life, and you really try. So that was the decision that I made, and I'm really grateful I did make that. And I tell you, it was not easy. The easy road would have been continuing to use, right? Continuing to stay stuck in those patterns, stuck in those environments. It was hard. It was really hard. So yeah, I got clean initially in jail. And then I finally got bail. My mother allowed me to have bail at home, which was by miracle. And I dug myself deep into recovery programs. I did every single program there was. I took every opportunity that was available to me. And I got really involved in the NA fellowship. And to be honest, that really saved my life. You know, I believe today that recovery is all about building community, and community creates that foundation. So the idea is that I'm the tree and my recovery foundation are the roots to that tree. And the further I spread them and the wider I spread them, the less likely I'm going to fall over. And that looks like doing all the suggested things, reaching out to safe people, doing all that self-development stuff. And like today I have a hunger for that, right? I have a hunger for spiritual growth. Because we're spiritual beings. You know, this whole time I've used drugs to numb myself. And in reality, to be human is to feel. And I was avoiding that my whole life. So yeah, it was pretty overwhelming when I first came into recovery that, you know, they have this saying that the worst thing is you get your feelings back and the best thing is you get your feelings back. Well, very true. But we learn coping tools on how to deal with that, how to live life on life's terms. And from doing all that hard work in recovery, I was recognized by the service that I was actually doing counseling with. And I remember my counselor saying to me, because I'm a hairdresser by trade, right? I had a really successful hair salon. And I lost that obviously to my addiction. But my counselor said to me, oh, Camille, you'd be great in addictions. You'd be absolutely great in addictions. And I said, no way. I don't want to do that. And honestly, a couple of months later, she had managed to twist my arm and I said, okay, why not? I'll try.
And then give it a crack.
Yeah, I'd give it a crack and give it a crack, right? Oh, and so it's kind of funny because you think about hairdressing sort of like a, it's almost like counseling, but you're getting your hair done as well. Well, it's like supporting people in a form, right? And yeah, so I did. I started and then, and now I'm here. And so today, you know, I'm the lived experience lead for Care NZ. I supervise kaimahi that are in peer support roles or in residential support roles. I am doing my level 7 at AUT in health sciences, which is in addictions. You know, and this is a person who never went to school. Like I went to school, but I never passed. I never passed NTA level 1. And you know, people used to say, you'd never be able to go back to university, Camille, as an adult learner. Well, look at me go. Anything is possible, man. If we have that hunger. Yeah, anything.
And you're studying something that you're invested in and that you're passionate about and that you're curious about. That does make a difference when it comes to learning, surely.
Massively. Yeah, massively. Yeah. So it's pretty exciting to see some new stuff that's happening over in the pipeline at the moment in my workspace. I've just been elected the co-chair of the National Lived Experience and Whānau Forum for Te Whara Ora as well. So we're doing some cool stuff. So I'm really excited to see.
So Camille, when you were going through that self-reflective phase and having to front up to sobriety and what you wanted to do with yourself, and you said that you were you found your feelings, which was a double-edged sword. How long into the process did you have to hang in there before you realized you'd come through the other side?
The first year is a full-time job trying to stay clean. First year. And there's another saying too, you know, the first year's for you and the rest is for others. I think, you know, in the first year, I definitely was holding on to my seat. Just trying to do everything I could just to stay clean. And the second year I started to think, oh, maybe I could do this. But it also was the questions of, okay, who actually am I? So in that second year I started thinking about, okay, what do I like? What do I dislike? I had to learn all those things again. What are my values? You know? And then the third year was kind of like, oh, I'm doing this. I'm doing this. And today, you know, I'm 4.5 years clean now, off everything, and life's easy, but life still happens, right? And I think that's also something that's really important to know is that just because we get clean, it doesn't exempt us from the pain of just living life on life's terms. Life still happens, but we have tools today that instead of turning to a substance or turning to picking something up and escaping, we can face it. And we can walk through it. That's the gold.
And I've spoken to enough people now over the years who have been in a very similar position to yourself to know that there's a point, isn't there, where you find a way to break through, but I guess not for everybody. I guess for people that haven't been as successful as yourself, Camille, with your recovery, they can't find a way to just hang in there for long enough. And so the lapses turn into the relapses and everything else, and they're trying really, really hard. How is it that you're able to try and get that message across to the people that you're working with? Man, this is a really hard process, but you have to trust that if you can just hang in there for long enough, you can get there.
I think finding purpose is really important. And even if that looks like just finding a community that you feel that you belong in, that will hold you. That will hold you. If you isolate, if you don't do the suggestive things, then the disease will talk to you. And there's like, it's very hard to escape that if you're not using tools. And the tools today look like, yeah, reaching out to somebody who's safe, using coping skills like, you know, spending time journaling, spending time reflecting, doing meditation. When I talk about meditation, it doesn't have to be the meditation that's like this. It can be mindfulness walking. It's learning how to be able to sit with self, because our whole lives, that's the complete opposite that we've wanted to do. Yeah.
And being comfortable with those thoughts and being alone with our thoughts and owning up to some of the things that we might be thinking would have done or are planning to do. And that can be uncomfortable, eh? For anybody.
It's so hard to pick up the phone. It's so hard to, that phone feels like it weighs 10 ton. But in reality, that's your lifeline. I find for me, as long as I talk about how I'm feeling, it passes. It passes and I don't have to act on it. And that's what saved my life in the early days, is just continuing to reach out, talk about how I was feeling, go to a meeting. You know, I have a really supportive auntie who I would ring up and I would talk to about how I was feeling. I had my mum, you know, and maybe some people don't have that available to them, but finding at least someone, and maybe that's a counsellor. Maybe that's some of our free services that we have. But utilising them, talking about it, the more we sit with it, the more it festers, and we don't get the power of choice when it happens.
So there'll be people listening to our conversation today, Camille, who will be desperately wanting to help other people because they've got someone special in their life who is struggling and is going through a similar path to what you were on for a while there. And I know these people, and some of them are my friends, and they are just desperate to help someone close in their life to turn things around. And it's breaking them in two. What's your advice for those people who are caring for others and who are wishing others well, but are ultimately or feel ultimately powerless?
Well, acknowledging that you are actually powerless, first and foremost. I have to deal with this on a daily basis and the mahi that I do. And I get asked this question all the time. One service that was really helpful for my mum was Bravehearts. Bravehearts is a really good way of educating yourself. So the more you understand about addiction, the more you're actually enabling yourself to be able to help your loved one. Because addiction is not a choice. You know, we often think that if you loved your children enough, you would just stop. That's not even a question. I love my kids. I loved my kids with all my heart. You know, but it was not a choice. If the drugs were there, I would take those just to be able to deal with my children. You know, that was just the reality of it. So yeah, reaching out and seeking help for yourself first and foremost, because you don't need to carry it on your own. And the other thing too that and this may seem a little bit harsh or a little bit tough love, but taking your hands off, allowing them to make those mistakes, and for them to learn from them themselves. Because if you are constantly trying to pick up their pieces for them and trying to fix it for them, we become really resentful at those who are trying to help us and we blame them. And that can just keep us really stuck in our addiction. So that was what was really helpful for me. And that's what continues to be helpful, I find, in the work that I do, is that, yeah, allowing them all day. We can sit with someone. We can be with someone and tell them that we love them and that we support them, but we're not going to fix anything for them. We can't make any decisions for them. They have to make those themselves. You know, they have to get to that point where they put the shovel down.
That was the metaphor that I was going to get to that you'd used before. Put the shovel down.
Mm-hmm.
Stop digging.
Because there's nothing on the other side. There's nothing on the other side.
How successful are you when you, you know, have you got, do you have a success rate that you measure, or do you just get a feel of how successful you've been able to be with this philosophy and organizing programs and helping reestablish connections for people? Does everyone that you work with buy into it?
I have quite a lot. Okay, so we work with Corrections as well, right? Corrections is one of our biggest stakeholders. And so what that looks like is that there's a lot of people who come into service who are very resistant to change. They're there just to tick boxes. And I tell you, this is the coolest part about it, is that it doesn't matter how they get there. It doesn't matter how they get into service or how they get to a meeting. It's what happens once they start listening. And things change. And I have witnessed in the past 2 years working in this field, at least 6 people who were extremely resistant to change that came through that pathway, who are now actually working in this field. You know, so like it does show, it does work. It does work. I think, being able to see someone who's been there, who knows what you're actually talking about, who knows what's going on up here, because this is the biggest enemy of all, you know, addiction.
What is the brain?
Yeah, it's the brain. It's our thinking. Our thinking is where all of it starts. It's where it all is in there. And if you've got someone who can understand that, then you don't feel like you're so alone. And that you're
so just go for walks. I think too, you just go for walks in the park with people, don't you? Or you have a coffee, or you help them with their groceries, just those little connections.
I used to when I started. But I don't so much now. That's more for the peer support workers. Now that I'm the lived experience lead, I do more of in an office, where we have one-on-one individual appointments. I really enjoy going to support a fire order at court as well when they're going through court proceedings. I advocate for them with different services, especially work and income, maybe with the police. I've developed, alongside 2 other clinicians, we developed an 8-week program that's based around lived experience lens. And this program has been so successful in the South Waikato. It's been amazing. So that's how I work, is a lot in groups. I run lived experience support groups, and I do a lot of stuff out in the community around 12-step as well. That's how I mainly support the people I work with now.
Thanks, John.
It's fun. I love it. Do you know what? It actually fuels my own recovery, right? So I'm forever grateful. I wouldn't be anywhere else. No.
Well, there's the prodigy effect, isn't there, where it's ostensibly when we teach others, it helps reinforce our own learning. So people that do a lot of teaching become more intelligent and more in tune with themselves. And I guess in a way, you're nodding, that's probably the effect that you're experiencing, that when you're able to help others, it's reflecting back on the path and the values of which you hold dear. Would that be right?
Yeah. But it's also, it's a two-way learning, right? I also learn from them. And that's cool. It's so cool.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it's so cool. Well, you know, this 8-week program, we've done so many intakes, and not one intake is the same. So I'm learning something different just because of the people. Having new people coming into group and their own lived experiences that they share, I'm still learning and I love it. It's just like it's a ball of knowledge.
All right. It's great to hear that you are thriving, because I guess for so many years you weren't.
I really wasn't. I really wasn't. No, I didn't even know who I was.
But you do now.
I do now. And I'm happy.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much for everything you're doing, Camille. And I know you've been recognised within the peer support industry in New Zealand for some amazing work that you've done. Congratulations for everything that you've been doing. and really appreciate your time on Take It From Us. And I'm so glad that you get to spend a special Mother's Day with your mum and your girls.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Kent.
Take It From Us is produced by Karen Murphy, and I am your host, Kent Johns. Please get in touch with us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Take It From Us. My story, your story, our story.
We can become one of those rapidly growing groups who have the audacity and courage to believe that we actually can change the world.
Technology, entertainment, design, and much more. TED Talks brings you inspiring presentations from speakers across the world. Hear activists, experts, and thought leaders sharing their ideas and stories. Wednesdays at 10 past 2pm, only live and only on Planet FM.
Catch up with the Bridgezone crew.
Listen to the banter on bidding, leads and a stealing of kings.
What the heck?
We ask the hard questions. No subject is safe. Should you play bridge with your spouse?
Is there gender inequality in bridge?
How hot are you?
How hot are you?
It's like eavesdropping on someone's conversation.
A postcard from Scotland.
Views from the experienced player to the improvers.
Join us. The fun way to discuss bridge dynamics.
Bridge. Easy to learn, hard to master.
Catch the Bridgezone on Planet 104.6 FM every Wednesday at 9:25 PM.
Our place.
Yes, our deep hair.
Our day care. Day farm.
Our place, Auckland. Good weather, good people, and I like it.
I love weather here. Not too much hot and not too much cold.
I love the fact that I'm in the centre of a very, very busy city and there's all these amazing parks. I can enjoy solitude in the centre of a city with 1.something million people.
I do like Auckland because of the busyness. And also I like the weather over here and I like the people.
Every community is living very peacefully and friendly. This I like.
On air, online, on mobile. planetaudio.org.nz. The Community Connection.
Take It From Us brings you real stories from real people, sharing their experiences of mental distress and journeys to recovery. Tune in next Tuesday at 12:30 PM right here on 104.6 Planet FM or catch the latest episodes at planetaudio.org.nz/takeitfromus. It's a half hour of commercial-free music coming up next now here on Planet FM, taking us through to Samlyn Khmer with news, music and updates from Cambodia on air at 10 past 2.
dragon lady. I'm her dapper dame. She got a Saturday night special, Lord. I'm a steady driver man. I'm a steady driver man. Lord, I'm a steady driver man, child. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. You know I need you. Yes, I do. Yes.